your sales senses. How do you sell? Well, many are untrained and go by their gut feelings. And a lot of guys say, well, I just go about the process instinctively. Great. I hope you don't decide to switch to brain surgery. The answer is using your inside senses. If you're in control of these senses and the dominant senses you radiate are positive, you can make sales. Lots of them. The big question is, do you radiate the positive senses or the negative ones? Where do your inside senses come from? Well, your mind controls the senses that lead you to sales success. The positive senses lead to positive results. No brain surgery there. Here are the six positive sales senses. One, the sense of confidence, the air that you have about you that's bred by preparation and previous wins. The best part about confidence is that it's contagious. You can give it to your prospect. Now, don't confuse confidence with its evil twin, arrogance. Two, the sense of positive anticipation. Everybody has read the best book on the subject before the age of five, The Little Engine That Could. I think I can. I think I can. Thinking you can is 50% of the outcome. So is thinking you can't. Three, the sense of determination. The sense of hanging in there no matter what. Determination is having the prospect tell you no and you hear it as not yet. Four, the sense of achievement. Everybody subconsciously strives for their goals. Sensing achievement comes from a replay of the satisfaction you gained from making your last sale. Remember how good that felt? Five, the sense of winning. Everybody wants to win, but only a few actually do. That's because the will to prepare to win must exceed the will to win. Read Vince Lombardi. Six, the sense of success. This is the hardest sense to master because you must sense it before you actually achieve it. That calm feeling of money in the bank and I can do it attitude and a well-lit path in front of you. The sense of positive purpose. Pretty easy so far, huh? Well, but the plot thickens. There's 8.5 negative senses that the subconscious mind presents and projects when you're selling. One, the sense of fear. Two, the sense of nervousness. Three, the sense of rejection. Four, the sense of procrastination or reluctance. Five, the sense of justification or rationale. Six, the sense of self-doubt. Seven, the sense of uncertainty. Eight, the sense of doom. And 8.5, the sense of I'm unlucky. Beware of these negative senses. They're mental blockers and will prevent the success or the sale from taking place. The negative senses block your ability to focus on the positive senses, the creative ones that breed success. The most powerful way to get rid of negative is to counterbalance them with positive thoughts and words, i.e., no complaining or blaming others. Well, balancing, by definition, is delicate. Counterbalancing is even more so. It's a simultaneous act of chasing away the negative ones, the negative senses, and focusing on the positive ones, the positive senses. It means harnessing and self-directing your inner thought process. It sounds simple, but it's not easy. That's why so few achieve greatness. To further complicate things, you're not sensing alone. The prospect has senses too. And often he or she can sense your senses, especially the negative ones. If your negative senses, like fear and self-doubt, dominate your presentation, they're going to preoccupy the prospect. Result, the prospect will become nervous about you, and it will alter his ability to get a clear message. Make sense? The great news about sales senses is you're in total control. You can convert negative senses to positive senses with a combination of dedication to lifelong learning and the achievement of a positive mental attitude. These studies will lead to taking positive actions and creating positive thoughts. Earl Nightingale, in his legendary CD, The Strangest Secret, says, "You become what you think about. Truer words have never been spoken, but the secret to the strangest secret is it's a dedicated self-discipline that must be practiced every day. How close to every day are you? The most interesting aspect of The Strangest Secret is it contains the counterbalance to turn all of your destructive senses into constructive senses by employing the strongest sense of them all, common sense. Red Bite, what's your focus factor? Where is your attention? Johnny, pay attention. I'm certain you heard those words 100 times as you were growing up. All you have to do is substitute your name for Johnny's name. Now, you thought you were being scolded. Actually, you were being given one of life's most valuable lessons. Pay attention. Now, you're all grown up, and you still haven't learned the lesson. You're more focused on yourself than on your world, or should I say, the world around you. When you're focused on yourself, for example, how you look or what you're wearing or what other people think of you, you're diverting your focus energy away from your success. Focus means intense purpose. And when you waste that focus on yourself, you're going to miss the opportunities around you. You're out of focus. Everyone will tell you to focus or be more focused, but very few will tell you how to focus. The easiest words to describe focus are be aware. Be aware of what is around you and be aware of who is around you. It sounds simple, but it means you have to divert selfish and insecure for open-minded and self-confident. Red Bite. Antennas up at all times. My mentor and friend, Earl Pertnoy, has preached those words to me for more than 25 years. And I don't care where you are. Bathrooms, airport lines, lobbies of hotels, car washes, elevators, and restaurants are all ripe for making connections if you're alert. Follow Earl's advice as I do, and you'll get the sales lead or the sales deal that you were never expecting. Red Bite. The awareness factor that's always around. The antennas up philosophy starts with the awareness of your immediate surroundings. If you're looking to be a master seller, a large portion of that has to do with your understanding and your capitalization on where you are, who you meet, and what you say. If you're at an event, your job is to keep your antennas up until you meet the key players, regardless of what it takes. You may have to ask someone, "Where's the big cheese?" You may have to look at every name tag. You may have to stay until everyone has left. You may even have to stand next to the person until the conversation that they're having with somebody else is completed. But if your antennas are somewhere in a bottle of beer or with your friends or looking for more food, the odds are they're pointed in the wrong direction. And not only will you not win, you will lose to someone whose antennas are pointed in the right direction. True story. The men's room at LaGuardia Airport. I got off the plane, had to use the facilities. The men's rooms at LaGuardia are full of urinals. You must also understand the rule of men's rooms. Men don't talk. They pee, they wash their hands, and then they leave. I happened to glance to the left of me and saw Hal Linden, also known as Barney Miller, and said, as we were peeing together, "The great equalizer of men." He started to howl. He almost peed on his shoes, which, by the way, were hush puppies. I asked, "Going to the city?" He said, "Yep." I said, "Want to split a cab?" He said, "Sure." And we drove into the city through the Astoria district of Queens, where Archie Bunker lived and the Barney Miller police station was located. It was a great ride. When we got to the city, he paid for the whole thing. My antennas were up. I had the guts to make the exchange, and I won. Did I win big? No, but I had fun. In the game of antennas up, it's not always about winning big. It's about having a good time. And it's about practice. I never fail to keep my antennas up, and I never fail to capitalize on the opportunity when it occurs. Neither should you. True story. Flying to Dallas. The other day I was flying from Buffalo to Dallas. As usual, my antennas were up. Sitting next to me on the plane was Hall of Fame quarterback Jim Kelly. We chatted a little bit, but I certainly didn't want to bring up the words Super Bowl. So I began to tell him that I was an author and a speaker, and that I had actually been on the same program with him a couple of times and had a couple of his autographed footballs. He smiled. I said, you know, as a noted speaker and author, you probably want my autograph. So I autographed my boarding card, and I handed it to him. He sat there kind of dumbfounded, and after about 30 seconds, I said, oh, and I wouldn't mind if you autographed yours and gave it to me. He laughed, autographed his boarding pass, and handed both of them back to me. It was fun. It's important for you to understand that focus and selling yourself are not about tactics. Selling is not about techniques. Selling is about focus and creative verbal exchange. And the only way to master focus and verbal exchange is work on it. Antennas up, antennas up. Principle 12.5, resign your position as general manager of the universe. You now have all the principles necessary for your success as a salesperson. Your ass is kicked, you're prepared to win, your brand is known, you sell on value, you're face-to-face, you talk to the decision maker, you're engaging, you're funny, you're creative, you've reduced their risk, you use testimonials to complete the transaction, and your antennas are up. But there's more. You need glue. You need to understand how to make each of these principles your own. You have to master these principles. And the first part of that is to master yourself. Most people are caught up in other people's drama. Did Bill Clinton lie? Was O.J. Simpson guilty? Did Kobe... Come on. Who cares if Ben is going to marry J-Lo? Better answer, how do any of these events affect your life? Best answer, they don't. Yet, you're going to spend tens, maybe hundreds of hours focused on this crap at the expense of your own career and your own success. Let's get closer to home. You have a boss. You have a team of salespeople. You have customers, maybe vendors, your friends, and they all have lives, problems, and situations. Stay out of them. Every time you stick your nose in somebody else's business, you risk 3.5 things. One, joining their pity party, further promulgating their situation. Two, giving bad advice. Three, wasting your own time that could be spent learning, making sales, and earning. And 3.5, getting your nose punched. If you add up the time you spend where it's none of your business or none of your concern, or that you cannot affect the outcome, like news or television reruns or other crap, you could have been the greatest salesperson in the world, or a syndicated columnist, or an author. But no, rather piss your time down the drain thinking that you're some kind of savior of mankind, when in fact, it's just the opposite. Save your own ass first. When you've mastered your own self-discipline, when you've mastered the science of selling, when you've mastered your personal positive attitude forever, when you've mastered becoming a dynamic presenter, when you've mastered your own financial affairs, when you've mastered your own family life, when you've mastered your own personal life, then and only then should you begin thinking about putting your nose in somebody else's affairs. Now, I know this seems a bit harsh, and at the end of a book, you tend to want everyone to live happily ever after and have the package tied up in some neat little bow. That's not what I want. What I want is for you to go back to the beginning of the book and use this last chapter as impetus and incentive to implement the first principle, kick your own ass. It's a cycle, a sales cycle, your sales cycle. In 1972, when the twins were born, I was in a rotten marriage, I was broke, and I was studying positive attitude daily. I first read the phrase, resign your position as general manager of the universe, at that time. I've searched back and I cannot find its origin. I wish I could. I wish I could tell you that I created the phrase, but I cannot. What I can tell you is that I've used this philosophy as one of the building blocks to my success. The reason that I've saved it for last is because it's the least evident and the most difficult. Everyone violates the principle, resign your position as general manager of the universe, even me. The difference between you and me is that I violate it less than you do. People come to me all the time because I'm so good at sales, they think I'm also good at life, and will often ask me to help resolve a situation. The only two things I do is tell them that these are my personal experiences and issue them the three-word challenge: seek professional help. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm certainly not a marriage counselor. I'm just a salesman and a dad, not in that order. The closest thing I come to advice with respect to a question I often get, what should I do with my career, or should I find another job, or what kind of sales position should I take? Those are big questions. Those are life questions. I'm not going to give somebody a specific answer for what to do. First of all, it lets them off the hook. And second of all, I don't want to impose my will on others. I'm persuasive. And to many, I'm influential. It's not a fair fight. The advice I give them is the same advice I'd give you. Find something that you love. Find something that you can believe in. Find an environment that's fun and people you can respect, and jump in with both feet. That's as close as I get to someone else's universe. And you need to do the same thing if you want to achieve any level of success in your personal career. The reason I've asked you to resign is that you're already in the middle of 100 things that you cannot affect the outcome, or worse, may even be blamed for the outcome. Get the hell out of that as fast as you can. Lock your doors, turn on a light, grab a book and a highlighter, and start to read. If you convert the time that you're currently spending, aka wasting, in someone else's universe to your own universe, in less than 5 years, you can be the king of your universe. When you achieve the status of king, you can begin to hold court. But my bet is you won't want to. Resigning your position as general manager of the universe is the single best step you can take to buying back the time that you claim you don't have, and give yourself a new opportunity to achieve at a level that heretofore you have only dreamed about and were not able to achieve. The minute you decide to resign is the same minute that you have chosen a smoother road to personal success. Your choice, baby. The less time you spend in other people's business, other people's problems, and other people's drama, the more time you'll have for your own success. Thanks for being my customer. The book is over. Almost. I realized when I completed the book that there were still some things that you needed to learn. Some more red formulas that you can use to succeed. Now you have the principles, the 12.5 principles. There's still some guidelines that you must understand in order to master the principles. In the pages that follow, or in the information that follows as I'm reading this or you're watching this, you're going to get a better mental picture of what you, the salesperson, must do in order to take the principles that you've read or watched and turn them into money. The first one is, I think I can. I think I can. I thought I could. I thought I could. The little salesman that could. A story, a philosophy, a strategy, a formula, a win, a big win. I've had more than 60 birthdays, and let's just say that they're not as exciting to me as they once were. However, they are more stimulating, more thought-provoking, and with each passing one, more intense. I think there's an old saying that goes, the flame burns brightest near the end. And not that I feel I'm near the end, but I certainly feel the flame burning brighter. I started to think about my favorite books. And for more than 50 years, my favorite book has been The Little Engine That Could. It's all about a train, trying to make it up a hill. Others tried to discourage her, but she had enough fan support, enough cheerleaders to make it up the hill using the timeless phrase, "I think I can, I think I can." Well, naturally, my thoughts turned to sales. And why not revive this 1930 classic with my version of The Little Salesman That Could? And what started out to be a whimsical thought ended up being a seminar at the Charlotte Home Builders Association. I'm going to try my best to recreate the points of that seminar. I think I can. I think I can. In order for salespeople to make it up the hill, they must have, or you must have, the same qualities that the 73-year-old little engine had. And keep in mind that for every little engine that could, there are 100 more that couldn't or even wouldn't. Interesting to note that no one ever wrote a book about the little engine that couldn't. Also interesting to note that in 1930, the author, Waddy Piper, had the foresight to make the little engine as a heroine rather than a hero. Here are the elements that I challenge you to think about and self-evaluate in your little engine. These are not how-to sales techniques. Rather, they are why-I elements of personal development. They're not sales now. Rather, they're sales forever. They're not about commissions. They're about wealth. And not just monetary wealth. They're also a wealth of knowledge. One, your total belief system. The theme of the book is also the theme of your success, believing that you can achieve whatever you set your mind to. You must believe that you work for the greatest company in the world, that you offer the greatest products and services in the world, and that you're the greatest person in the world, or you're in the wrong job. High self-belief leads to high success. Medium self-belief leads to medium success. Low self-belief, you get the idea. Number two, belief drives passion. Mediocrity stems from lack of belief more than lack of skill. Passion is the intangible in a salesperson's presentation that makes the message transferable. Passion exhibited by the salesperson creates a desire to buy in the heart and the mind of the prospect. Passion exhibited by the salesperson converts selling to buying. People don't like to be sold, but they love to buy. It's an easier emotional transfer that can later be justified logically. Three, have the attitude of yes. I think I can as a yes thought, not just a positive thought. It's a positive determination with a positive projected outcome. It's more than a determination, it's yes. A yes attitude is stated in terms of what can be done and stated in a positive outcome manner. Earl Nightingale, in his legendary recording, The Strangest Secret, says, "You become what you think about all day long. Think you can." Four, invest your time in things that will help you succeed. How many hours a day do you spend in non-success areas? Time wasters like TV reruns, news for the second time today, or somebody else's drama. What could you achieve if you took half of that time and invested it in studying about your biggest business obstacle or your biggest business opportunity? Suppose you just decided to become an expert in relationship building. An hour a day will make you a world-class expert in 5 years. Or you can take that same hour and become a world-class expert in some TV rerun. The choice is yours and those who will pass you. Think you can stop watching so much TV. Number five, begin capturing your thoughts, strategies, and ideas in writing. If someone were to ask me for one thing that I can pinpoint to my success without a nanosecond of hesitation, I would answer writing. In a month, I will enter my 15th year of writing my weekly column. Success is a low-level word when I describe what the discipline of writing has done for my career, my success, my fulfillment, and my legacy. It should also be noted that I never started out to be a writer. I was only clarifying my thoughts about my strategies, my philosophies, and methods of selling, and then getting them published. I never wrote a book. I just wrote a column. However, the column is turned into many books. If you only choose to believe one thing that I tell you, believe that writing will take you from where you are to any place you want to go. Think you can write. Number 6, take a course in writing. Learning how to write will help you put words that you're thinking into clear, concise, written thoughts and ideas. Personally, I have found the more I write, the more ideas I get, and the clearer they become. Most people think, I can't write, or I'm not a good writer. Easy answer, study writing. Read somebody who's writing that you like. Write your thoughts down. Take a course in writing, and then begin to refine your technique or your style. When I first began writing, I thought I was a pretty good writer. I just reread my first 10 columns. They pretty much sucked. But I thought I could. I did. I learned, and then I refined. And note well, I wish there was a way that I could explain the power of the written word. The only thing I can say is to reinforce my earlier statement that every piece of business good fortune for the last 15 years has in some way or another come from my writing. Number 7, take a course in something that you love. By learning more about what you love to do, it will create a positive atmosphere and a positive mindset about learning and achieving. The things you love to do, you do with passion. The combination of learning, achieving, and passion can make for world-class expertise in anything you think you can. Number 8, get so internet savvy that you can teach a 14-year-old rather than vice versa. Many adult business people are functional computer illiterates. If you don't have your own website, and you don't have your own email address, and you don't access the internet every day, and you think you're in the business world, think again. People who did not grow up in the computer age may have let it pass them by. It's okay. Not everybody thought automobiles would make it either. Some people thought radios were stupid. And some, in their infinite wisdom, thought there would only be a market for a dozen laptops. That statement was made after extensive research. I believe that guy is now a waiter at Shoney's. If you are at the crossroads of internet entry and computer literacy, I implore you to think you can. Computers are cheap, internet access is cheaper, and both are 21st century tools that are the gateway to your fame, fortune, financial freedom, fulfillment, and fun. Number 9, begin clarifying your thoughts and your ideas in public and get known as a person of value at the same time. After I began writing, people began to call and ask if I'd speak at their civic organization, Rotary or Kiwanis. It gave me a chance to speak and listen to my own written thoughts. Speaking, like writing, is a barrier to entry in the world of success. Rather than taking a course in speaking, you only have to join Toastmasters. Live speaking opportunities from the first meeting. Go to Toastmasters.org. Speaking strikes fear in the heart of the unprepared. But speaking will position you as a leader and a thinker in your community or your industry. Note well, if you write your own thoughts down, speaking becomes infinitely more simple. Once you get past a little bit of fear, it's not only fun, it's profitable. It's also an open door and an open wallet to anybody in your audience. If they like you, it's likely they will pay to see you again. Number 10. Publish something. This column is my words of advice published by somebody else, when I first wrote it as a column. Being published has an authenticity about it. The written word is very authoritative and is often tantamount to believability. Dewey wins, notwithstanding. Being published also means that someone believes your thoughts are worthy enough or sound enough for others to read. It's an affirmation that your thinking is clear and your direction is sound. It's one of the ultimate, I think I can, I thought I could achievements. And number 10.5, give value first. This is a philosophy and a strategy that I learned by accident that has become the key differentiator between how others sell while I create the atmosphere to buy. Here's the marketing strategy, another accident, that arose from that philosophy. I put myself in front of people who can say yes to me, and I deliver value first. The overused and baseless expression added value, or its brother value added, means you have to buy first in order to receive any value. It's referred to as an incentive. My take on it is it's somewhere between silly, non-existent, self-serving, or begging. My strategy, and soon to be a book, is to put valuable information in the hands of my most probable purchasers so that they may benefit, get to know me, come to respect me, and then call me wanting to purchase. Now, this is not a theory. It's a strategy that's been working for me for 15 years. And it's important to note that this strategy was not, I think I can. It just happened as a result of all the other I think I cans. It's an I thought I could. It was the classic case of cause and effect rather than preconceived notion. Well, there's the formula. Think you can? Or do you think it sounds like too much work? Why don't you not prejudge what is hard work or easy and begin by purchasing or going to your kid's bedroom and getting a copy of The Little Engine That Could? That's an easy way to start your thinking process. I know, it sounds simplistic, almost hokey. But so does every other self-help book ever written. Hokey, but accurate. Now, I've just given you a birthday present on my birthday. I'm going to add a wish. I wish you would take this information and read it 3 or 4 times. And I wish you would take action in some way that might begin to put you on a better path to achievement, success, and fulfillment. If you know me, you know that I very rarely wish for anything. Maybe because I believe wishing is a poor substitute for hard work. I can wish all I want, but the hard work is up to you. And my feeling about it is, of course, I think you can. I think you can. The two most important words in selling, two words that define sales, your sales. Can you guess what they are? Make money, customer service, close sales, follow up? No. Those are words about sales. I'm talking about the words that lead to sales. And let me give you a hint, the words are separate. You give up? The first word is you. Many salespeople believe that customers buy their products and services first. Incorrect. The first thing a prospect buys is the salesperson. The first sale that's made is you. In order to affect any direct sale, the customer must first believe in the person conveying the message. This is, unfortunately, most evident when you is bad. Ever walk out of a car dealership because the salesperson was too pushy or worse, insulted you? Then you drove somewhere else and bought the same product because they were nice to you. You bought the salesperson, then you bought the product. Ever had a rude salesperson or server and walked away without purchasing? Not only did you walk away, you told friends and associates the horror story. The person couldn't sell themselves, therefore couldn't complete a sale that a customer was anxious to make. They wanted a buy. Amazing or what? It all begins with you. Prospects must first believe in and like the messenger, or the message has no credibility. How's your personal product? How's your you? Is it saleable, or does it need some work? Let me give you the 11.5 things that make you strong enough to make a sale. Rate yourself in each one of these categories from 1, which is the poorest, to 10, which is the greatest, and see how great you are. The first is your image. How you look affects the way you are perceived. How do you look? 2 is your ability to speak, your ability to convey the message. Are you a member of Toastmasters? 3, your ability to establish rapport, making the prospect feel at ease, and developing some common ground as a basis to move forward. Do you make the scene warm? Number four is your attitude, your enthusiasm combined with your state of internal happiness. Not what you say, but how you say it. Are you positive plus? Number five, your product knowledge, your convincibility. Do you know it cold? Number six is your desire to help. Desire to help shows through, so does greed. Does your help side outweigh your greed side? Number seven is your preparedness, a confidence builder if you are, or a destroyer if you aren't. Do you prepare for every call? Number eight is your humor. Nothing builds good feelings like good humor and a good laugh. Can you make others laugh? Number nine, your creativity. What separates you from your competition? How do you make follow-ups that don't beg for the sale? What makes them talk about you? It's your creativity, baby. How's yours? Number 10, your sincerity. Shows through either way. Are you genuine? Number 11, your reputation, or the reputation that precedes you. If you're well-known in the community or in your field, you may walk in with a slight advantage. How's your reputation? And number 11.5, your glue. The way you handle your total package, your stature, the way you carry yourself, the way you put it all together. The character of you is what leads to the credibility of what you sell. How well are you put together? Well, how'd you score? The perfect score is 120. If you scored from 110 to 120, you're a great you with a great success story to tell and are setting a great example for others. 99 to 109, pretty darn good you, climbing the ladder and making daily progress. 70 to 98, you ain't as hot as you think. You're in need of a 20-minute personal daily workout. 50 to 69, you're mediocre at sales, and so is your success to date. You have a decision to make. Stay and get better at it every day, or get out before you're fired and blame somebody else for everything that's wrong with you. 30 to 49, you stink. Go to the nearest bookstore and buy Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. Don't leave home until you read it. Making you great is fun, and it will make more sales than 1,000 sales techniques. Oh, and for those of you who have a long way to go, here's the best advice I've ever heard to start and stay on the path to be the best. You are the greatest if you think you are. The second most important word in selling is why. It's important because it leads to the one thing you can't make sales without: answers. The word why applies to three aspects of your sales and your life. Why you, why them, why ask? Why you is, why are you in sales? To make good money? False. A better and more truthful answer is what you will do with the money, what your money will buy you, what you will help or who you will help with your money. That's your real why. Determining the real reason and the real reason why you're in sales will allow you to go into a sales call with a purpose, a mission. Identifying and developing your why will help you achieve the dedication and the self-discipline you need to learn to become the greatest salesperson in the world. Discovery of why will also lead you to the belief that you are the best. Self-belief is the first and most critical function of the selling process. How's yours? Here's a success strategy. Write your why in a few words. Example, I want my son to go to college or the college of his choice. Write it on a 3x5 card and place them in five strategic locations: on your bathroom mirror, on the dashboard of your car, on the wall of your office where you can see it, maybe on your computer, on your office telephone, and in your wallet near your money. You may have more than one why. For best results, post them all. Now let's talk about why them. The biggest mistake salespeople make is trying to sell for the wrong reasons, their own. You see, people don't buy for your reasons, they buy for their reasons. So find their reasons, their why, their motive first, and sell them on that. Finding out the prospect's real why is the most important process in all of selling. Here's a success strategy. The real why that you're after may be three or four questions deep. When you get to a superficial why answer, ask why again. It will get you closer to the real truth. The secrets to the discovery of why is people may be embarrassed or reluctant to reveal their real why. People may not know their real why because they've never thought about it or had the guts to think about it or had the courage to face it. The real why may be behind the stated need, something they really need to accomplish, something they hate, love, or are passionate about, or the real why only comes to the surface with the proper use of part three, which is why ask. Questions are the heart of sales. To get to the true why of the prospect, you must ask the right why questions. Questions that get the prospect to answer about your desires stated in their interest or their needs. Ask them questions about them, their why, and have them answer in terms of you, your why. Why is the questioning element of the sale that will lead you to other pathways of information if asked properly. Why leads you to all the answers you need in order to complete a sale, define expectations, and build a relationship. Why gets down to the real reasons for the sale, yours and theirs. So here's a success strategy. Pre-plan your questions. Have a list with you that you refer to at all times and test them out for reaction and their ability to generate response. The two most important words in sales, you and why, are part of a formula that every person should have emblazoned on their soul. You plus why equals yes. The biggest reason salespeople don't succeed is because they don't expose themselves to existing information. That's a quote from Jim Rohn, America's Business Philosophy. And here are the 12.5 principles for lifelong learnings. While I give them to you, why don't you rate yourself? 1, poor. 2, average. 3, good. 4, very good. 5, the greatest. You can also use a scale of 1 is never, 2 is rarely, 3 is sometimes, 4 is frequently, and 5 is always. 1, it starts with a positive attitude. Learn how to achieve one. Gather the information of positive people in your library. Napoleon Hill, Dale Carnegie, W. Clement Stone, Maxwell Maltz, Wayne Dyer, Earl Nightingale, Norman Vincent Peale, Jim Rohn. 2, listen to audio. Own several sets and play them in your car. 3, read books. Build your library. Read one book a month. 4, attend live seminars, as many as you can afford, as often as you can. 5, join Toastmasters. 90 minutes of speaking and self-evaluation a week. 6, record yourself speaking. A weekly ritual. 7, record yourself reading. A weekly ritual. 8, record yourself selling. A weekly ritual. 9, record your personal commercial. A weekly ritual. 10, record your own set of sales tapes. Your own set of sales CDs. Get great at selling and presenting at the same time. 11, listen to your own CDs as much as you listen to others. 12, spend 30 minutes a day learning something new. In 12.5, practice what you've learned as soon as you learn it. Scorecard, 60 to 70, 65 to 70, wow. 59 to 64, A-OK. 21 to 58, get help. 0 to 20, start your life over. Implement the rule of the more, the more. Love it or leave it. The more you love it, the more you will sell. The more you prepare yourself for the sale, the more you will sell. The more you believe it, the more you will sell it. If your self-belief isn't sky high, why bother? The more you watch TV, the more the competition will kick your ass. So what does it take to be number one and stay there? I called a customer of mine and asked to interview his best salesperson. He was a regional guy. And he said, hey, that's easy. The best salesperson in my region is also the best salesperson in the company for the last 3 years. Her name is Terry Norris. So I asked the woman to email me her 10 best qualities, the ones she felt put her over the top. Email arrived the next morning. No surprise. It began like this. Hello, Jeffrey. When I was asked to call you with my 10 best qualities, I said, what? Only 10? Well, if I can only give you 10, here they are. Spoken with the personal pride and self-confidence of a number one. All salespeople are different with one exception. They all want to make the sale. So as you listen to this list, be advised that these are qualities that may not be the ones that you seek to attain or master. That's up to you. They're presented to you because this woman is the number one salesperson on the team of more than 1,000, and she didn't get there by accident. So I thought you might be interested in how a winner thinks and acts. Here, in her own words, are the top 10 qualities and characteristics of what makes Terry Norris number one. Number one, a contagious, positive attitude. I believe that I'm blessed and that positive things will happen in my life because I believe that positive things will happen to me, and they do. Number two, excited about the prospect of helping others, sincerely caring. When I have appointments, I want to help my prospective customers solve a problem, get better service, increase productivity, and I believe that they sense that I want to help them, not sell them something. Number three, self-assured, not arrogant. Confidence. I know that I can achieve whatever I decide to, and I'm willing to work hard for. I believe in myself and my abilities. My personal motto is, they can who believe they can, and I believe I can. Number four, I like people and they like me. People like me right away. I'm not a threat to them. I'm not being perceived as salesy. Being able to relate to all people, I don't try to type people, I just try to like them. Number five, not just book smart. Being able to assess and solve real-world problems, being able to prioritize and decide which things or which prospects to spend time on and which not to. Work smarter, not harder. Number six, if I'm not having fun, what's the point? I've often been described as easily amused, and I think this is one of my best characteristics. I find joy in almost everything. Number seven, I do everything full force. I sweat when I work, and I sweat when I dance. 100%, 110% is the minimum acceptable standard. If something is worthwhile, I give it everything I have. Number eight, unspoken integrity. Visibly honest. I try to be honest and ethical in everything that I do. I feel that being trustworthy and honorable is a strong statement of character. I try to always keep my promises. Hopefully, my word means something to others because it means everything to me. Number nine, I concentrate on the details without getting caught up in them. Beyond organized, detail is vital to my success. Sounds minute, but it's huge. I keep things in order so I can function error-free. I try not to waste time or energy by trying to find things twice or pick up dropped balls. Number 10, I'm kid-like happy on the inside. I have the enthusiasm of a 2-year-old with a college degree and a business card. I'm the eternal cheerleader for myself and others. I want everyone to win, except my competition. Well, I interviewed Terry at one of her sales conferences. Besides being a gem of a person, her interview produced several verbal gems. Here's a few more for your thought enjoyment. My attitude knob is always set on positive. I create rapport so that the prospect feels like he or she is in my home and go to my fridge and get a Coca-Cola or a Diet Coca-Cola, which is her favorite, without asking. And then I asked her if there was any one characteristic she'd place over the others. She said, I'm Gomer Pyle friendly, sincere, and believable. Well, golly, no wonder she's number one. Free Redbit. You want some more number one wisdom? I prepared a list of Terry Norris's sales gems and philosophies from our interview. Winning philosophies and strategies. If you want them, go to www.gittimer.com. Register if you're a first-time user and enter the word Norris in the Redbit box. Some of you are reading this or some of you are listening to this and saying, Jeffrey, don't bug me with this philosophy stuff. Tell me how to make sales. I am. This is the most powerful sales lesson I can deliver, and only a few will get it. The ones who will rise to the top. This book has no ending. You've not reached the end of the book. You've reached the end of your first listening or reading of the book. The Little Red Book of Selling is not something that you read and put on a shelf. The Little Red Book of Selling is not something you listen to and put away. The Little Red Book of Selling is to be read, reread, listened to, re-listened to. That's why I put red in the title. If you hear a song on the radio and you like it, you want to hear it again. If you hear it 5 times, you can sing along. If you hear it 10 times, you can sing it on your own. Same with this book. If you want to be the master, 10 times is the key. When I first studied attitude, Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich was our Bible. We had to read 1 chapter every day. Well, since there's only 15 chapters, it meant that every 3 weeks we completed the book. I did this for 1 year. Read the book approximately 15 times. Actually, I didn't read the book. I owned the book. It was my guiding light towards a permanent positive attitude. Was it a dumb thing to do? I don't know. My friends thought it was at the time. They still have negative attitudes. The Little Red Book is not to be read or listened to. This book is to be studied. This book is to be implemented. This book is to be talked about. This book is to be put into your sales life. There's too much content in here for you to read it all at once or listen to it all at once and put it away and say, "Oh, that was good read. It was a good read." If you read it 10 times, you're going to be great at sales, have a great attitude, have great creativity, great relationships, and a great bank account. Great life. If you've not mastered every red principle, go back and study each one. If you've not mastered every red principle, go back and make a game plan for each one. If you have not mastered every red principle, go forward and implement each one. If you make a sale, you can earn a commission. If you make a friend, you can earn a fortune. Turn red into green. The Little Red Book of Selling is available as a blended learning solution. This will enable you and your organization to take these 12.5 principles of sales greatness and make them come alive in your company. The Little Red Book of Selling package training contains facilitator guides, participant workbooks, multimedia supports, job aids, and e-learning reinforcement. Call 704-333-1112 and scream, "More red!" My name is Jeffrey Gittimer. Thank you for being my customer.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.